Welcome to Econ on Mics, where we dive into the world of research with insightful conversations featuring six remarkable women economists from Asia, Africa, and Latin America. Proudly presented by the International Economic Association's Women in Leadership and Economics Initiative in collaboration with Women in Econ and Policy. Stay tuned as we uncover fresh perspectives and explore the global economic landscape.
Hello everyone, I'm Amal Medjini, your host for today's episode, and I'm thrilled to be joined by a distinguished researcher in the field of economics from Tunisia, Leila Baghdadi. Leila is a senior economist at the MENA Chief Economist Office at the World Bank. At the World Bank, Leila is co-leading the MENA Gender Innovation Lab and coordinating the regional research network of central banks in the MENA region and the World Bank MENA Chief Economist Office. Prior to that, Leila was a professor of economics, at ESSEC, University of Tunis, where she held the World Trade Organization chair. She was an executive board member of the Central Bank of Tunisia from August 2019 to June 2023. During my time at Tunis Business School, Leila was my professor of microeconomics and international economics courses. Also during my master's degree, she was my professor of international economics, but it didn't end there. She supervised my master's thesis and was my advisor for my PhD in international economics and development. Leila, welcome and thank you for taking the time to join us.
Hi, Amal. Happy to join you today. And thank you for the introduction.
So without further ado, let's dive into the conversation. Leila, you worked on several topics related to globalization, such as migration, trade, nexus, the environmental implications of trade, global value chain, trade policy, and non-tariff barriers. But today, we're going to focus more on your work related to environmental issues. Would you like to begin by telling us a bit about your work on the environmental impact of globalization?
Yes, of course. I started working on this subject in 2010 with co-authors Inma Martinez-Zarzuzo and Dahbib Zitouna. We explored a new question at the time, if regional trade agreement with environmental provisions reduce bilateral emissions between partner countries. The paper was published in the Journal of International Economics. More recently, two particular aspects of the environment trade nexus have captured our interest. Firstly, we investigated whether firms participating in global value chains have a stronger incentive to adopt innovative environmental practices to stay competitive. This research, co-authored with Inma and Samuel Sewers, was published in World Development. Secondly, an ongoing project co-authored with Inma again and Insaf Gedidi, my former PhD student, now a research fellow at the UN Economic Commission for Africa, explores how countries' participation in regional environmental agreements, along with their trade policies, affects CO2 emissions with a specific focus on the role of GVC.
What motivated you to look at how participating in global value chains affects the environmental impact of firms?
We had two motivations. First, from an academic point of view, studies at the firm level are still scant. And they focus on single country cases and environmental performance. Therefore, there remains a rather limited understanding of the consequences that scattering production chains across the globe has for the environment. We know little about how this process affects firms' environmental footprint. Secondly, my experience as a member of the Council of Economic Advisors, reporting to the Chief of Government of the Republic of Tunisia during 2017-2021, provided valuable real-world context. We were drafting a pact to enhance economic competitiveness and social equity, including policies to help Tunisia integrate further into GVCs. Discussion with trade unions at that time about the environmental and social impacts of Tunisian firms within global value chains were particularly eye-opening. This experience highlighted the crucial need to consider not just economic upgrades, but also social upgrades when formulating global value chains related policies.
So are there any findings that you can share about the environmental practices of firms that participate in global value chains relative to firms which primarily operate in domestic markets?
We had interesting findings. In the recent paper I just mentioned, co-authored with Samuel and Emma, we find that firms that join GVCs perform better across several environmental indicators. Companies that start producing within GVCs are more likely to adopt cleaner production practices, and in some cases also monitor CO2 emissions. We find evidence that GVC participation is only associated with improvement in environmental performance. If firms face stricter regulation or pressure from their buyers. Therefore, our take here is that to ensure that GVC contribute to firms becoming more responsive to environmental concerns, it is really important that internationalization of supply chain is accompanied by proper environmental regulation.
Can you share some insights on how the impact of international trade and GVC participation on the environment varies across regions and countries? Whether through the scale effect, composition effect, or technique effect?
Yes, of course. And what we find is that the growing importance of global value chain in the world economy has raised awareness on the consequences of GVC for environmental degradation, especially in developing countries. GVC's participation can harm or benefit the environment, depending on the extent to which they use clean and environmentally friendly production technique. This is a technique effect. Participation in global value chains can benefit the country involved through the competition and technique effect that they generate. GVC participation fosters the use of green technologies and eco-friendly products, which in general leads to reduced emission. However, the scale effect generated by an early participation in global value chains could increase per capita carbon emissions.
Thank you for all these explanations, Leila. This actually leads us to talk about trade agreements. And what impact do you think different types of trade agreements and tariffs have on carbon emissions? Or to put it differently, how can incorporating environmental provisions into trade agreements address the environmental impact of participation in global value chains?
This question attracted really our interest during the last years. And in a recent research, my co-author and I investigated how international trade policy and participation GVCs affects carbon dioxide emissions when countries have regional trade agreement with environmental provisions. While increases in trade is linked to higher pollution level, we find that ratifying trade agreements that include environmental provision can help lower carbon emissions. We also find that the impact of tariffs on carbon emissions varies depending on the type of imported goods, with higher tariffs on intermediate and capital goods having greater impact on lowering emission compared to consumer goods. This research is still ongoing, and we are looking to finer our results. And we hope we will find something interesting, either for the researchers and also policymakers.
Okay, this is so interesting. And this correlation between environmental provisions and carbon emissions says a lot about how future trade agreements should look like, actually. I believe we've covered enough ground on this topic. It's never enough, actually, but I don't want to miss this opportunity to ask you about your new research. So beyond your work on trade, Leila, you are also starting new research on advancing gender equality in the Middle East and North Africa. Could you tell us about some of the interventions being carried out in the region?
Yeah, thank you for pointing out this because I'm very excited by this new research agenda on a very important topic to my eyes. It's a part of my new role with the Middle East and North Africa Office of the Chief Economist at the World Bank, where I am co-leading with my colleague Asif Islam, the MENA Gender Innovation Lab, or MENA GIL. The MENA GIL conducts impact evaluation using randomized control the trials to find the most effective evidence-based intervention to inform policy and facilitate the use of research evidence in policy making and practice to help women in MENA reach their economic potentials. We did that. The MENA GIL supported several impact evaluation in MENA and across four countries till now, then in Egypt, Morocco, Tunisia, and Yemen. Several topics were explored, such as providing childcare vouchers for mothers, cash transfers for women in Tunisia, firms hiring discrimination against women in Tunisia, but also some other countries. And we are still developing and rolling out our strategy for the years to come.
Are there any striking findings or discoveries from these evaluations that you can share with us?
Yeah, I like this study in Tunisia, that I think it's emblematic of what's going on in MENA. This research is called With or Without Him, Experimental Evidence on Cash Grants and Gender-Sensitive Training in Tunisia, and published in the Journal of Development Economics recently in July 2023. The researchers evaluated the impact of cash grant and training program on women's income-generating activities in Gendouba, one of Tunisia's poorest governorate. They find that it benefited women who attended training without their partners. This highlights the importance of gender norms when we are designing any development project.
Actually, your work in Tunisia is fascinating. Could you also tell us about a study or impact evaluation that you have carried out in other MENA countries? What common threats did you notice when studying gender in Tunisia and in Egypt, for example?
Yeah, I would like to highlight a work by other researchers that was funded by the MENA Gender Innovation Lab. And for us, it's a starting point and the main component of our next 5-year strategy. And this work is about childcare in Egypt. Then basically, researchers in this impact evaluation, they gave vouchers to women, and at the same time, they were matching these women to available jobs. And they found out that actually several things matter. Again, gender norms. Gender norms were really acting like barriers for women to really use this voucher for childcare, something we didn't thought about or researcher didn't thought about. And this actually generated for us a whole bunch of questions on what we need to do in the future when we are thinking about childcare facilities to help women participate in the labor market.
This is interesting. So this brings us to the end of the episode. We've covered a lot of ground today. We talked about the impact of GPT participation on the environmental footprint of firms, the importance of environmental provisions in trade agreements, and your work in promoting gender equality. For the audience, in case someone is interested in the topics that you are working on or the economic and policy landscape of the MENA region in general, do you have any recommendations for further reading? Any book or papers that they can refer to?
Yes, I recommend reading the World Bank's Middle East and North Africa Economic Updates, which is published twice a year, to understand the economic landscape in MENA and the many challenges these economies face. Even before joining the World Bank MENA Chief Economist Office, I used to use this update in my courses on the political economy of MENA, to talk about trade, to talk about the challenges MENA countries face. I also recommend the book, Crony Capitalism in the Middle East by Ishaq Diwan and Adil Malik. This book, which I contributed actually for Tunisia, I think it captures also a little bit the dynamic of these countries post-Arab Spring and pre-Arab Spring. I also like to recommend a book by Mustafa Nabli and Jeffrey Bean Nugent. It's about Tunisia, but still it captures the economic development history of Tunisia, but it can give it an idea about what's happening also in other MENA countries. This book is called Tunisia's Economic Development, Why Better Than Most of the Middle East, but Not East Asia. I also wouldn't miss this opportunity to highlight your work, Amal. You have several publications that will appear soon, work on supply chain, on the impact of COVID-19 on supply chain in Tunisia that will appear soon at the Journal of Industrial Business and Economics. And you also worked on the impact of COVID-19 on consumer prices, and you have some other works on Tunisia's economic diversification that will appear soon. And I'm very happy to see other women economic researchers in MENA that will take over the challenges in our countries. Thank you so much, Amal, for this.
For highlighting my work, Leila. So, Leila, your research topics in economics that are largely male dominated. Are there any challenges you have faced in the field, and anything that women economists interested in trade and macro topics can learn from your experience?
Well, I can speak a little bit about my experience, hoping that others maybe will learn from it. In my case, I think I was lucky enough that I had co-authors, women co-authors. I think this was really a life-changing experience. Then I can't thank enough my co-authors, Marianne Jensen and Inma Martinez-Arzozo, who were really instrumental in my career. And they kept me flowing, kept me working on this topic and upgrade myself. Something particular about trade is that it's macro and micro in the same time. If I look back to my research, I was able to work on the macro picture of trade. Then when we're speaking about global value chain, we can see that actually we did the work using, you know, working on countries, on aggregate indicators, on macro indicators. And we can link it to several other things on exchange rate, for instance, current account balance, and also debt issues. But the good thing about trade also is that you can look to the micro foundation of trade and you can work on firms. That's also what we did. Either for environment and trade or for other issues, we worked on jobs creation, working on firm-level data. Then I think also that's the attractive part for researchers working on trade, that you can really link the micro-macro linkages and have a better understanding. And this is really helpful, for instance, when I worked as an executive board member at the central bank, it helped me a lot to, in the same time, understand the global picture and link it also to the consequences that could have of any policy decision, the consequences of this policy decision also on firms, for instance.
Thank you once again for sharing your wealth of knowledge and experience with us. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for joining us. A special thanks to our brilliant speakers and interviewers for their valuable contributions. Share your favorite moments using the hashtag #AmplifyingVoices and stay tuned for more impactful discussions.